Too bad it's such a small... What's that? Doxson asked.
Vin turned, frowning. There was a pocket of light in the distance. Like... torches. Lit in the mists. Another one appeared to the east, near a ska slum. A third appeared, then a fourth. In a matter of moments, it seemed like the entire city was glowing.
"You insane genius," Doxson whispered.
"What?"
Clubs asked, frowning.
"We missed it," Doxson said. "The Atheum, the army, the nobility. That wasn't the job Kelsier was planning. This was his job. Our crew was never supposed to topple the final empire. We were too small. An entire city's population, however."
"You're saying he did this on purpose?" Breeze asked.
"He always asked me the same question," Sazed said from behind. "He always asked what gave religions so much power. Each time I answered him the same."
Sazed looked at them, cocking his head.
"I told him that it was because their believers had something they felt passionate about. Something or someone."
"But why not tell us?" Breeze asked.
"Because he knew," Doxson said quietly. "He knew something we would never agree to. He knew that he would have to die."
Breeze shook his head.
"I don't buy it. Why even bother with us then? He could have done this on his own."
"Why even bother?"
"Dox,"
Vin said, turning.
"Where's that warehouse Kelsier rented? The one where he held his informant meetings?"
Doxson paused.
"Not far away, actually. Two streets down. He said he wanted it to be near the Bolt Lair."
"Show me,"
Vin said, scrambling over the side of the building. The gathered ska continued to yell, each cry louder than the one before. The entire street blazed with light, flickering torches turning the mist into a brilliant haze. Doxson led her down the street, the rest of the crew trailing behind. The warehouse was a large rundown structure, squatting disconsolately in the slum's industrial section. Vin walked up to it, then flared pewter and smashed off the lock. The door slowly swung open. Doxson held up a lantern, and its light revealed sparkling piles of metal. Weapons. Swords, axes, staves, and helmets glittered in the light. An incredible silvery hoard. The crew stared at the room in wonder.
"This is the reason," Vin said quietly. "He needed the Renew Front to buy weapons in such numbers. He knew his rebellion would need these if they were going to succeed in taking the city."
"Why gather an army, then?" Ham said. "Was it just a front, too?"
"I guess," Vin said.
"Wrong,"
a voice said, echoing through the cavernous warehouse.
"There was so much more to it than that."
The crew jumped, and Vin flared her metals, until she recognized the voice.
"Renew?"
Doxson held his lantern higher.
"Show yourself, creature."
A figure moved in the far back of the warehouse, staying to shadow. However, when it spoke, its voice was unmistakable.
"He needed the army to provide a corps of trained men for the rebellion. That part of his plan was hampered by events. That was only one bit of why he needed you, however. The noble houses needed to fall to leave a void in the political structure. The garrison needed to leave the town so that the ska wouldn't be slaughtered."
"He planned this all from the start,"
Ham said with wonder.
"Kelsier knew that the ska wouldn't rise up. They'd been beaten down for so long, trained to think that the Lord Ruler owned both their bodies and their souls. He understood that they would never rebel. Not unless he gave them a new god."
"Yes,"
Renew said, stepping forward. The light glittered off his face, and Vin gasped in surprise.
"Kelsier!"
she screamed. Ham grabbed her shoulder.
"Careful, child. It's not him."
The creature looked at her. It wore Kelsier's face, but the eyes, they were different. The face didn't bear Kelsier's characteristic smile. It seemed hollow, dead.
"I apologize," it said. "This was to be my part in the plan, and is the reason Kelsier originally contracted with me. I was to take his bones once he was dead, then appear to his followers to give them faith and strength."
"What are you?" Vin asked with horror. Renu Kelsier looked at her, and then his face shimmered, becoming transparent. She could see his bones through the gelatinous skin. It reminded her of...
"A mistwraith!"
"A chondra," the creature said, its skin losing its transparency.
"A mistwraith that has grown up, you might say."
Vin turned away in revulsion, remembering the creatures she had seen in the mist. Scavengers, Kelsier had said. Creatures that digested the bodies of the dead, stealing their skeletons and images.
"The legends are even more true than I thought."
"You were part of this plan, too," the Chondra said. "All of you. You ask why he needed a crew? He needed men of virtue. Men who could learn to worry more for the people than for coin. He put you before armies and crowds, letting you practice leadership. He was using you. But he was also training you."
The creature looked at Doxon, Breeze, then Ham.
"Bureaucrat, politician, general. For a new nation to be born, it will need men of your individual talents."
The Chondra nodded to a large sheet of paper affixed to a table a short distance away.
"That is for you to follow. I have other business to be about."
It turned as if to leave, then paused beside Vin, turning toward her with its disturbingly Kelsier-like face. Yet the creature itself wasn't like Renu or Kelsier. It seemed passionless. The Chondra held up a small pouch.
"He asked me to give you this."
It dropped the pouch into her hand, then continued on, the crew giving it a wide berth as it left the warehouse. Breeze started toward the table first, but Ham and Doxon beat him to it. Vin looked down at the bag. She was afraid to see what it contained. She hurried forward, joining the crew. The sheet was a map of the city, apparently copied from the one Marsh had sent. Written at the top were some words. "My friends, you have a lot of work to do, and you must do it quickly. You must organize and distribute the weapons in this warehouse, then you must do the same in two others like it located in the other slums. There are horses in a side room for ease of travel. Once you distribute the weapons, you must secure the city gates and subdue the remaining members of the garrison. Breeze, your team will do this. March on the garrison first, so that you can take the gates in peace. There are four great houses that retain a strong military presence in the city. I have marked them on the map. Ham, your team will deal with these. We don't want an armed force other than our own inside the city. Doxon, remain behind while the initial strikes happen. More and more Ska will come to the warehouses once word gets out. Breeze and Ham's armies will include the troops we have trained, as well as augmentations, I hope, from the Ska gathering in the streets. You will need to make certain that the regular Ska get their weapons, so that clubs can lead the assault in the palace itself. The soothing stations should already be gone. Renu delivered the proper order to our assassin teams before he came to get you to bring you here. If you have time, send some of Ham's thugs to check out those stations. Breeze, your own soothers will be needed amongst the Ska to encourage them to bravery." "I think that's everything." "It was a fun job, wasn't it? When you remember me, please remember that. Remember to smile. Now move, quickly. May you rule in wisdom." The map had the city divided, with the various divisions labeled with various crew members' names. Vin noticed that she, along with Sazed, were left out.
"I'll go back to that group we left by our house," Club said in a grumbling voice. "Bring them here to get weapons."
He began to hobble away.
"Clubs," Ham said, turning.
No offense, but why did he include you as an army leader? What do you know of warfare?
Clubs snorted, then lifted up his trouser leg, showing the long twisting scar that ran up the side of his calf and thigh, obviously the source of his limp.
Where do you think I got this? He said,
then began to move away. Ham turned back with wonder.
I don't believe this is happening.
Breeze shook his head.
And I assumed that I knew something about manipulating people. This is amazing. The economy is on the verge of collapsing, and the nobility that survive will soon be at open warfare on the countryside. Kel showed us how to kill inquisitors. We'll just need to pull down the others and behead them. As for the Lord Ruler...
Eyes turned on Vin. She looked down at the pouch in her hand and pulled it open. A smaller sack, obviously filled with atium beads, fell into her hand. It was followed by a small bar of metal wrapped in a sheet of paper. The 11th medal. Vin unwrapped the paper. Vin, it read. Your original duty tonight was going to be to assassinate the high nobleman remaining in the city. But, well, you convinced me that maybe they should live. I could never figure out how this blasted metal was supposed to work. It's safe to burn, it won't kill you. But it doesn't appear to do anything useful. If you're reading this, then I failed to figure out how to use it when I faced the Lord Ruler. I don't think it matters. The people needed something to believe in, and this was the only way to give it to them. Please don't be angry at me for abandoning you. I was given an extension on life. I should have died in Mare's place years ago. I was ready for this. The others will need you. You're their Mistborn now. You'll have to protect them in the months to come. The nobility will send assassins against our fledgling kingdom's rulers. Farewell. I'll tell Mare about you. She always wanted a daughter.
What does it say, Vin? Ham asked.
It says that he doesn't know how the 11th medal works. He's sorry. He wasn't certain how to defeat the Lord Ruler. We've got an entire city full of people to fight him, Doc said. I seriously doubt he can kill us all. If we can't destroy him, we'll just tie him up and toss him in a dungeon.
The others nodded.
All right, Doxon said. Breeze and Ham, you need to get to those other warehouses and begin giving out weapons. Spook, go fetch the apprentices. We'll need them to run messages. Let's go.
Everyone scattered. Soon the Ska they had seen earlier burst into the warehouse, holding their torches high, looking in awe at the wealth of weaponry. Doxon worked efficiently, ordering some of the newcomers to be distributors, sending others to go gather their friends and family. Men began to gear up, gathering weapons. Everyone was busy except for Vin. She looked up at Sazed, who smiled at her.
"Sometimes we just have to wait long enough, mistress," he said. "Then we find out why exactly it was that we kept believing. There is a saying that Master Kelsier was fond of. There's always another secret," Vin whispered. "But says, everyone has something to do except me. I was originally supposed to go assassinate noblemen, but Kel doesn't want me to do that anymore." "They have been neutralized," Says had said, "but not necessarily murdered. Perhaps your place was simply to show Kelsier that fact?"
Vin shook her head.
"No. I have to do more, Says."
She gripped the empty pouch, frustrated. Something crinkled inside of it. She looked down, opening the pouch and noticing a piece of paper that she hadn't seen before. She pulled it out and unfolded it delicately. It was the drawing that Kelsier had shown her, the picture of a flower. Mare had always kept it with her, dreaming of a future where the sun wasn't red, where plants were green. Vin looked up.
"Bureaucrat, politician, soldier. There's something else that every kingdom needs. A good assassin."
She turned, pulling out a vial of metal and drinking its contents, using the liquid to wash down a couple beads of atium. She walked over to the pile of weapons, picking up a small bundle of arrows. They had stone heads. She began breaking the heads off, leaving about a half inch of wood attached to them, discarding the fletched shafts.
"Mistress?" Sazed asked with concern.
Vin walked past him, searching through the armaments. She found what she wanted in a shirt-like piece of armor, constructed from large rings of interlocking metal. She pried a handful of these free with a dagger and pewter-enhanced fingers.
"Mistress, what are you doing?"
Vin walked over to a trunk beside the table, within which she had seen a large collection of powdered metals. She filled her pouch with several handfuls of pewter dust.
"I'm worried about the Lord Ruler," she said, taking a file from the box and scraping off a few flakes of the 11th metal.
She paused, eyeing the unfamiliar silvery metal, then swallowed the flakes with a gulp from her flask. She put a couple more flakes in one of her backup metal vials.
"Surely the rebellion can deal with him," Sazed said. "He is not so strong without all of his servants, I think." "You're wrong," Vin said, rising and walking toward the door. "He's strong, Saz. Kelsier couldn't feel him. Not like I can. He didn't know." "Where are you going?" Sazed asked behind her.
Vin paused in the doorway, turning, mist curling around her.
"Inside the palace complex there is a chamber protected by soldiers and inquisitors. Kelsier tried to get into it twice."
She turned back toward the dark mists.
"Tonight, I'm going to find out what's inside of it."
I have decided that I am thankful for Rashik's hatred. It does me well to remember that there are those who abhor me. My place is not to seek popularity or love. My place is to ensure mankind's survival.
36. Vin walked quietly toward Creedic Shaw. The sky behind her burned, the mists reflecting and diffusing the light of a thousand torches. It was like a radiant dome over the city. The light was yellow, the color Kelsier had always said the sun should be. Four nervous guards waited at the same palace doorway that she and Kelsier had attacked before. They watched her approach. Vin stepped slowly, quietly, on the mist-wetted stones, her mist cloak rustling solemnly. One of the guards lowered a spear at her, and Vin stopped right in front of him.
"I know you," she said quietly. "You endured the mills, the mines, and the forges. You knew that someday they would kill you and leave your families to starve. So you went to the Lord Ruler, guilty but determined, and joined his guards."
The four men glanced at each other, confused.
"The light behind me comes from a massive Ska rebellion," she said. "The entire city is rising up against the Lord Ruler. I don't blame you men for your choices, but a time of change is coming. Those rebels could use your training and your knowledge. Go to them. They gather in the Square of the Survivor."
"The Square of the Survivor?" a soldier asked.
"The place where the survivor of Hath Sin was killed earlier today."
The four men exchanged looks, uncertain. Vin rioted their emotions slightly.
"You don't have to live with the guilt anymore."
Finally, one of the men stepped forward and ripped the symbol off his uniform, then strode determinedly into the night. The other three paused, then followed, leaving Vin with an open entrance to the palace. Vin walked down the corridor, eventually passing the same guard chamber as before. She strode inside, stepping past a group of chatting guards without hurting any of them, and entered the hallway beyond. Behind her, the guards shook off their surprise and called out in alarm. They burst into the corridor, but Vin jumped and pushed against the lantern brackets, hurling herself down the hallway. The men's voices grew distant. Even running, they wouldn't be able to keep up with her. She reached the end of the corridor, then let herself drop lightly to the ground, enveloping cloak falling around her body.
She continued her resolute, unhurried pace. There was no reason to run. They'd be waiting for her anyway. She passed through the archway, stepping into the dome-roofed central chamber. Silver murals lined the wall, braziers burned in the corners. The floor was an ebony marble, and two inquisitors stood blocking her path. Vin strode silently through the room, approaching the building within a building that was her goal.
"We search all this time," said an inquisitor in his grinding voice, "and you come to us. A second time."
Vin stopped, standing about 20 feet in front of the pair. They loomed, each of them nearly 2 feet taller than she, smiling and confident. Vin burned atium, then whipped her hands from beneath her cloak, tossing a double handful of arrowheads into the air. She flared steel, pushing powerfully against the rings of metal wrapped loosely around the arrowhead's broken hafts. The missiles shot forward, ripping across the room. The lead inquisitor chuckled, raising a hand and pushing disdainfully against the missiles. His push ripped the unattached rings free from the hafts, shooting the bits of metal backward. The arrows themselves, however, continued forward, no longer pushed from behind, but still carried by a deadly momentum. The inquisitor opened his mouth in surprise as 2 dozen arrowheads struck him. Several punched completely through his flesh, continuing on to snap against the stone wall behind him. Several others struck his companion in the legs. The lead inquisitor jerked, spasming as he collapsed. The other growled, staying on his feet but wobbling a bit on the weakened leg. Vin dashed forward, flaring her pewter. The remaining inquisitor moved to block her, but she reached inside her cloak and threw out a large handful of pewter dust. The inquisitor stopped, confused. To his eyes he would see nothing but a mess of blue lines, each one leading to a speck of metal. With so many sources of metal concentrated in one place, the lines would be virtually blinding. The inquisitor spun, angry, as Vin dashed past him. He pushed against the dust, blowing it away, but as he did so, Vin whipped out a glass dagger and flipped it toward him. In the confusing mess of blue lines and atium shadows, he missed noticing the dagger, and it took him square in the thigh. He fell, cursing in a crackly voice. "Good thing that worked," Vin thought, leaping over the groaning body of the first inquisitor. "Wasn't sure about those eyes of theirs." She threw her weight against the door, flaring pewter and tossing up another handful of dust to keep the remaining inquisitor from targeting any metals on her body. She didn't turn back to fight the two further, not with the trouble one of the creatures had given Kelsier. Her goal, this infiltration, wasn't to kill, but to gather information, then run. Vin burst into the building within a building, nearly tripping on a rug made from some exotic fur. She frowned, scanning the chamber urgently, searching for whatever the Lord Ruler hid inside of it. "It has to be here," she thought desperately. "The clue to defeating him. The way to win this battle." She was counting on the Inquisitors being distracted by their wounds, long enough for her to search out the Lord Ruler's secret and escape. The room had only one exit, the entrance she'd come through, and a hearth burned in the center of the chamber. The walls were decorated with odd trappings. Furs hung from most places, the pelts dyed in strange patterns. There were a few old paintings, their colors faded, their canvases yellowed. Vin searched quickly, urgently, looking for anything that could prove to be a weapon against the Lord Ruler. Unfortunately, she saw nothing useful. The room felt foreign, but unremarkable. In fact, it had a comfortable hominess, like a study or den. It was packed full of strange objects and decorations, like the horns of some foreign beast and a strange pair of shoes with very wide flat bottoms. It was the room of a pack rat, a place to keep memories of the past. She jumped as something moved near the center of the room. A pivoting chair stood by the hearth, and it spun slowly, revealing the wizened old man who sat in it. Bald, with liver-spotted skin, he appeared to be in his 70s. He wore rich, dark clothing, and he frowned angrily at Vin.
"That's it," Vin thought. "I failed. There's nothing here. Time to get out."
Just as she was spinning to dash away, however, rough hands grabbed her from behind. She cursed, struggling as she glanced down at the Inquisitor's bloodied leg. Even with pewter, he shouldn't have been able to walk on it. She tried to twist away, but the Inquisitor had her in a powerful grasp.
"What is this?" the old man demanded, standing. "I'm sorry, Lord Ruler," the Inquisitor said deferentially.
"Lord Ruler? But I saw him. He was a young man."
"Kill her," the old man said, waving his hand. "My lord," the Inquisitor said, "this child is of special interest. Might I keep her for a time?" "What special interest?" the Lord Ruler said, sighing as he sat again. "We wish to petition you, Lord Ruler," said the Inquisitor, "regarding the Canton of Orthodoxy."
"This again?" the Lord Ruler said wearily.
"Please, my lord," said the Inquisitor.
Vin continued to struggle, flaring her pewter. The Inquisitor pinned her arms to her sides, however, and her backward kicking did very little good.
"He's so strong," she thought with frustration.
And then she remembered it. The 11th medal, its power sitting within her, forming an unfamiliar reserve. She looked up, glaring at the old man.
"This had better work."
She burned the 11th medal. Nothing happened. Vin struggled in frustration, her heart sinking. And then she saw him, another man, standing right beside the Lord Ruler.
Where had he come from?
She hadn't seen him enter. He had a full beard and wore a thick woolen outfit with a fur-lined cloak. It wasn't rich clothing, but it was well constructed. He stood quietly, seeming content. He smiled happily. Vin cocked her head. There was something familiar about the man. His features looked very similar to those of the man who had killed Kelsier. However, this man was older and more alive. Vin turned to the side. There was another unfamiliar man beside her, a young nobleman. He was a merchant from the looks of his suit, and a very wealthy one at that.
What is going on?
The 11th medal burned out. Both newcomers vanished like ghosts.
"Very well," said the elderly Lord Ruler, sighing. "I agree to your request. We will meet in several hours' time. Tavidian has already requested a gathering to discuss matters outside the palace."
"Ah," said the second Inquisitor. "Yes, it will be good for him to be there. Good indeed."
Vin continued to squirm as the Inquisitor pushed her to the ground, then lifted his hand, gripping something she couldn't see. He swung, and pain flashed through her head. Despite her pewter, all went black. Elland found his father in the north entryway, a smaller, less daunting entrance to keep venture, though only when compared with the majestic Grand Hall.
"What's going on?"
Elland demanded, pulling on his suit coat, his hair disheveled from sleep. Lord Venture stood with his guard captains and canal masters. Soldiers and servants scattered through the white and brown hallway, rushing about with an air of apprehensive fright. Lord Venture ignored Elland's question, calling for a messenger to ride for the East River docks.
"Father, what's happening?" Elland repeated.
"Scar Rebellion," Lord Venture snapped.
"What?"
Elland thought, as Lord Venture waved for another group of soldiers to approach.
"Impossible."
A Scar Rebellion in Luthadel itself? It was unthinkable. They didn't have the disposition to try such a bold move. They were just...
"Valet is Scar," he thought. "You have to stop thinking like other noblemen, Elland. You have to open your eyes."
The garrison was gone, off to slaughter a different group of rebels. The Ska had been forced to watch those gruesome executions weeks ago, not to mention the slaughter that had come this day. They had been stressed to the point of breaking.
Temadre predicted this, Elend realized. So did half a dozen other political theorists. They said that the final empire couldn't last forever. God at its head or not, the people would someday rise up. It's finally happening. I'm living through it. And I'm on the wrong side.
Why the canal masters? Elend asked.
We're leaving the city, Lord Venture said tersely.
Abandon the keep? Elend asked. Where's the honor in that?
Lord Venture snorted.
This isn't about bravery, boy. It's about survival. Those Ska are attacking the main gates, slaughtering the remnants of the garrison. I have no intention of waiting until they come for noble heads.
But,
Lord Venture shook his head.
We were leaving anyway. Something happened at the pits a few days ago. The Lord Ruler isn't going to be happy when he discovers it.
He stepped back, waving over his lead narrowboat captain.
Ska rebellion, Elend thought, still a little numb. What was it that Temadre warned in his writings? That when a real rebellion finally came, the Ska would slaughter wantonly, that every nobleman's life would be forfeit. He predicted that the rebellion would die out quickly, but that it would leave piles of corpses in its wake. Thousands of deaths. Tens of thousands.
Well, boy, Lord Venture demanded, go and organize your things.
I'm not going, Elend surprised himself by saying.
Lord Venture frowned.
What?
Elend looked up.
I'm not going, father.
Oh, you're going,
Lord Venture said, eyeing Elend with one of his glares. Elend looked into those eyes, eyes that were angry not because they cared for Elend's safety, but because Elend dared defy them. And, strangely, Elend didn't feel the least bit cowed.
Someone has to stop this. The rebellion could do some good, but only if the Ska don't insist on slaughtering their allies. And that's what the nobility should be. Their allies against the Lord Ruler. He's our enemy, too.
Father, I'm serious, Elend said. I'm going to stay.
Bloody hell, boy! Must you insist on mocking me?
This isn't about balls or luncheons, father. It's about something more important.
Lord Venture paused.
No flippant comments? No buffoonery?
Elend shook his head. Suddenly Lord Venture smiled.
Stay then, boy. That's a good idea. Someone should maintain our presence here while I go rally our forces. Yes, a very good idea.
Elend paused, frowning slightly at the smile in his father's eyes.
The Atium. Father is setting me up to fall in his place, and even if the Lord Ruler doesn't kill me, father assumes I'll die in the rebellion. Either way, he's rid of me. I'm really not very good at this, am I?
Lord Venture laughed to himself, turning.
At least leave me some soldiers, Elend said.
You can have most of them, Lord Venture said. It will be hard enough to get one boat out in this mess. Good luck, boy. Say hello to the Lord Ruler in my absence.
He laughed again, moving toward his stallion, which was saddled and readied outside. Elend stood in the hall, and suddenly he was the focus of attention. Nervous guards and servants, realizing that they'd been abandoned, turned to Elend with desperate eyes.
I'm in charge, Elend thought with shock. Now what?
Outside, he could see the mists flaring with the light of burning fires. Several of the guards were yelling about an approaching mob of Ska. Elend walked to the open doorway, staring out into the chaos. The hall grew quiet behind him, terrified people realizing the extent of their danger. Elend stood for a long moment. Then he spun.
Captain, he said, gather your forces and the remaining servants. Don't leave anyone behind. Then march to keep Li Cal.
Keep Li Cal, my lord?
It's more defensible, Elend said. Plus both of us have too few soldiers. Separated, we'll be destroyed. Together we might be able to stand.
We'll offer our men to the Lical in exchange for protecting our people.
But, my lord,
the soldier said,
the Lical are your enemies.
Elland nodded. Yes, but someone needs to make the first overture. Now get moving. The man saluted, then rushed into motion.
Oh, and captain,
Elland said. The soldier paused. Pick out 5 of your best soldiers to be my honor guard. I'll be leaving you in charge. Those 5 and I have another mission.
My lord?
The captain asked with confusion.
What mission?
Elland turned back toward the mists. We're going to go turn ourselves in. Vin awoke to wetness. She coughed, then groaned, feeling a sharp pain in the back of her skull. She opened dizzy eyes, blinking away the water that had been thrown on her, and immediately burned pewter and tin, bringing herself completely awake. A pair of rough hands hoisted her into the air. She coughed as the Inquisitor shoved something into her mouth.
"Swallow," he ordered, twisting her arm.
Vin cried out, trying without success to resist the pain. Eventually she gave in and swallowed the bit of metal.
"Now burn it," the Inquisitor ordered, twisting harder.
Vin resisted nonetheless, sensing the unfamiliar metal reserve within her. The Inquisitor could be trying to get her to burn a useless metal, one that would make her sick, or worse, kill her.
"But there are easier ways to kill a captive,"
she thought in agony. Her arm hurt so much that it felt like it would twist free. Finally, Vin relented, burning the metal. Immediately, all of her other metal reserves vanished.
"Good," the Inquisitor said, dropping her to the ground.
The stones were wet, pooled with a bucketful of water. The Inquisitor turned, leaving the cell and slamming its barred door. Then he disappeared through a doorway on the other side of the room. Vin crawled to her knees, massaging her arm, trying to sort out what was going on.
"My medals!"
She searched desperately inside, but she found nothing. She couldn't feel any metals, not even the one she had ingested moments before.
What was it? A 12th metal?
Perhaps allomancy wasn't as limited as Kelsier and the others had always assured her. She took a few deep breaths, climbing to her knees, calming herself. There was something pushing against her. The Lord Ruler's presence. She could feel it, though it wasn't as powerful as it had been earlier, when he had killed Kelsier. Still, she didn't have copper to burn. She had no way to hide from the Lord Ruler's powerful, almost omnipotent hand. She felt depression twisting her, telling her to just lie down, to give up.
"No," she thought. "I have to get out. I have to stay strong."
She forced herself to stand and inspect her surroundings. Her prison was more like a cage than a cell. It had bars running along 3 of the 4 sides, and it contained no furniture, not even a sleeping mat. There were 2 other cell cages in the room, one to either side of her. She had been stripped. They had only left her with her undergarments. The move was probably to make certain that she didn't have any hidden metals. She glanced around the room. It was long and thin and had stark stone walls. A stool sat in one corner, but the room was otherwise empty.
"If I could find just a bit of metal..."
She began to search. Instinctively, she tried to burn iron, expecting the blue lines to appear, but of course she had no iron to burn. She shook her head at the foolish move, but it was simply a sign of how much she'd come to rely on her allomancy. She felt blinded. She couldn't burn tin to listen for voices. She couldn't burn pewter to strengthen her against the pain of her hurting arm and head. She couldn't burn bronze to search for nearby allomancers.
Nothing. She had nothing. "You functioned without allomancy before," she told herself sternly. "You can do it now."
Even so, she searched the bare floor of her cell, hoping for the chance existence of a discarded pin or nail. She found nothing. So she turned her attention to the bars. However, she couldn't think of a way to get off even a flake of the iron.
"So much metal here," she thought with frustration, "and I can't use any of it."
She sat back on the ground, huddling up against the stone wall, shivering quietly in her damp clothing. It was still dark outside. The room's window casually allowed in a few trails of mist. What had happened with the rebellion? What about her friends? She thought that the mists outside looked a bit brighter than usual. Torchlight in the night? Without Tin, her senses were too weak to tell.
"What was I thinking?" she thought with despair. "Did I presume to succeed where Kelsier had failed? He knew that the 11th medal was useless."
It had done something, true, but it certainly hadn't killed the Lord Ruler. She sat, thinking, trying to figure out what had happened. There had been an odd familiarity about the things the 11th medal had shown her. Not because of the way the visions had appeared, but because of the way Vin had felt when burning the medal.
"Gold. The moment when I burned the 11th medal felt like that time when Kelsier had me burn gold."
Could it be that the 11th medal wasn't really 11th at all? Gold and Atium had always seemed oddly paired to Vin. All of the other medals came in pairs that were similar. A base medal, then its alloy, each doing opposite things. Iron pulled, steel pushed. Zinc pulled, brass pushed. It made sense. All except for Atium and gold. What if the 11th medal was really an alloy of Atium or of gold? It would mean that gold and Atium aren't paired. They do different things. Similar, but different. They're like...
like the other medals, which were grouped into larger bases of four. There were the physical medals, iron, steel, tin, and pewter. The mental medals, bronze, copper, zinc, and brass. And there were the time-affecting medals, gold and its alloy, and Atium and its alloy.
That means there's another medal, one that hasn't been discovered, probably because Atium and gold are too valuable to forge into different alloys.
But what good was the knowledge? Her 11th medal was probably just a paired opposite of gold, the metal Kelsier had told her was the most useless of them all. Gold had shown Vin herself, or at least a different version of her, that it felt real enough to touch. But it had simply been a vision of what she could have become had the past been different. The 11th medal had done something similar. Instead of showing Vin's own past, it had shown her similar images for other people. And that told her nothing. What difference did it make what the Lord Ruler could have been? It was the current man, the tyrant that ruled the final empire, that she had to defeat. A figure appeared in the doorway, an inquisitor dressed in a black robe, the hood up. His face was shadowed, but his spike heads jutted from the front of the cowl.
"It is time," he said.
Another inquisitor waited in the doorway as the first creature pulled out a set of keys and moved to open Vin's door. Vin tensed. The door clicked and she sprang to her feet, scrambling forward.
"Have I always been this slow without pewter?" she thought with horror.
The Inquisitor snatched her arm as she passed, his motions unconcerned, almost casual, and she could see why. His hands moved supernaturally quickly, making her seem even more sluggish by comparison. The Inquisitor pulled her up, twisting her and easily holding her. He smiled with an evil grin, his face pocked with scars. Scars that looked like arrowhead wounds, she thought with shock.
But healed already? How can it be?
She struggled, but her weak, pewterless body was no match for the Inquisitor's strength. The creature carried her toward the doorway, and the second Inquisitor stepped back, regarding her with spikes that peeked out from beneath its cowl. Though the Inquisitor who carried her was smiling, this second one had a flat line of a mouth. Vin spat at the second Inquisitor as she passed, her spittle smacking it right on one of its spike heads. Her captor carried her out of the chamber and through a narrow hallway. She cried out for help, knowing that her screams, in the middle of Cretic Shaw itself, would be useless. At least she succeeded in annoying the Inquisitor, for he twisted her arm.
"Quiet," he said, as she grunted in pain.
Finn fell silent, instead focusing on their location. They were probably in one of the lower sections of the palace. The hallways were too long to be in a tower or spire. The decorations were lavish, but the rooms looked unused. The carpets were pristine, the furniture unmarked by scuff or scratch. She had the feeling that the murals were rarely seen, even by those who often passed through the chambers. Eventually, the inquisitors entered a stairwell and began to climb. One of the spires, she thought. With each climbing step, Vin could feel the Lord Ruler getting closer. His mere presence dampened her emotions, stealing her willpower, making her numb to everything but lonely depression. She sagged in the Inquisitor's grip, no longer struggling. It took all of her energy to simply resist the Lord Ruler's pressure on her soul. After a short time in the tunnel-like stairwell, the Inquisitors carried her out into a larger, circular room. And despite the power of the Lord Ruler's soothing, despite her visits to noble keeps, Vin took just a brief moment to stare at her surroundings. They were majestic like none she'd ever seen. The room was shaped like a massive, stocky cylinder. The wall, there was only one, running in a wide circle, was made entirely of glass. Lit by fires from behind, the room glowed with spectral light. The glass was colored, though it didn't depict any specific scene. Instead, it seemed crafted from a single sheet, the colors blown and melted together in long, thin trails, like mist, she thought with wonder. Colorful streams of mist, running in a circle around the entire room. The Lord Ruler sat in an elevated throne in the very center of the room. He wasn't the old Lord Ruler. This was the younger version, the handsome man who had killed Kelsier. Some kind of impostor? No, I can feel him, just as I could feel the one before. They're the same man. Can he change how he looks, then, appearing young when he wishes to put forth a pretty face? A small group of gray-robed, eye-tattooed obligators stood conversing on the far side of the room. Seven inquisitors stood waiting, like a row of shadows with iron eyes. That made nine of them in all, counting the two that had escorted Vin. Her scar-faced captor delivered her to one of the others, who held her with a similarly inescapable grip.
"Let us begin with this," said the Lord Ruler.
A regular obligator stepped forward, bowing. With a chill, she realized that she recognized him.
"Lord Prelan Tavidian," she thought, eyeing the thin, balding man. "My father."
"My lord," Tavidian said, "forgive me, but I do not understand. We have already discussed this matter." "The Inquisitors say they have more to add," the Lord Ruler said in a tired voice.
Tavidian eyed Vin, frowning in confusion.
"He doesn't know who I am," she thought. "He never knew he was a father."
"My lord,"
Tavidian said, turning away from her.
"Look outside your window. Do we not have better things to discuss? The entire city is in rebellion. Scar torches light up the night, and they dare go out into the mists. They blaspheme in riots, attacking the keeps of the nobility."
"Let them," the Lord Ruler said in an uncaring voice. He seemed so worn.
He sat strongly on his throne, but there was still a weariness to his posture and his voice.
"But my lord," Tavidian said, "the great houses are falling."
The Lord Ruler waved a dismissive hand.
"It is good for them to get purged every century or so. It fosters instability, keeps the aristocracy from growing too confident. Usually I let them kill each other in one of their foolish wars, but these riots will work."
"And if the Scar come to the palace?"
"Then I will deal with them," the Lord Ruler said softly. "You will not question this further."
"Yes, my lord," Tavidian said, bowing and backing away.
Now, the Lord Ruler said, turning to the Inquisitors, what is it you wished to present?
The scarred Inquisitor stepped forward.
Lord Ruler, we wish to petition that leadership of your ministry be taken from these men and granted to the Inquisitors instead.
We have discussed this, the Lord Ruler said. You and your brothers are needed for more important tasks. You are too valuable to waste on simple administration.
But, the Lord Ruler said, by allowing common men to rule your ministry, you have unwittingly allowed corruption and vice to enter the very heart of your holy palace.
Idle claims, Tavidian spat. You say such things often, Carr, but you never offer any proof.
Carr turned slowly, his eerie smile lit by the twisting colored window light. Vin shivered. That smile was nearly as settling as the Lord Ruler's soothing.
Proof? Carr asked. Well, tell me, Lord Prelin. Do you recognize that girl?
Bah! Of course not, Davidian said with a wave of his hand. What does a Scar girl have to do with the government of the ministry?
Everything, Carr said, turning to Vin. Oh, yes, everything. Tell the Lord Ruler who your father is, child.
Vin tried to squirm, but the Lord Ruler's allomancy was so oppressive, the Inquisitor's hands were so strong.
I don't know,
she managed to say through gritted teeth. The Lord Ruler perked up slightly, turning toward her, leaning forward.
You cannot lie to the Lord Ruler, child, Carr said in a quiet, rasping voice. He has lived for centuries and has learned to use allomancy like no mortal man. He can see things in the way your heart beats and can read your emotions in your eyes. He can sense the moment when you lie. He knows. Oh, yes, he knows.
I never knew my father, Vin said stubbornly.
If the Inquisitor wanted to know something, then keeping it a secret seemed like a good idea.
I'm just a street urchin.
A mistborn street urchin? Carr asked. Why, that's interesting. Isn't it, Davidian?
The Lord Prelin paused, his frown deepening. The Lord Ruler stood slowly, walking down the steps of his dais toward Vin.
Yes, my lord, Carr said. You felt her allomancy earlier. You know that she is a full Mistborn, an amazingly powerful one. Yet she claims to have grown up on the street. What noble house would have abandoned such a child? Why, for her to have such strength, she must be of an extremely pure line. At least one of her parents must have been from a very pure line.
What are you implying? Davidian demanded, paling.
The Lord Ruler ignored them both. He strode through the streaming colors of the reflective floor, then stopped right in front of Vin.
So close, she thought.
His soothing was so strong that she couldn't even feel terror. All she felt was the deep, overpowering, horrible sorrow. The Lord Ruler reached out with delicate hands, taking her by the cheeks, tilting her face up to look into her eyes.
"Who is your father, girl?" he asked quietly.
"I..."
Despair twisted inside of her. Grief, pain, a desire to die. The Lord Ruler held her face close to his own, looking into her eyes. In that moment she knew the truth. She could see a piece of him. She could sense his power. His godlike power. He wasn't worried about the Ska Rebellion. Why would he have to worry? If he wished, he could slaughter every person in the city by himself. Vin knew it to be the truth. It might take him time, but he could kill forever, tirelessly. He need fear no rebellion. He'd never needed to. Kelsier had made a terrible, terrible mistake.
"Your father, child,"
the Lord Ruler prompted, his demand like a physical weight upon her soul. Vin spoke, despite herself.
"My brother told me that my father was that man over there, the Lord Brelin."
Tears rolled down her cheeks, though when the Lord Ruler turned from her, she couldn't quite remember why she had been crying.
"It is a lie, my lord,"
Davidian said, backing away.
"What does she know? She's just a silly child."
"Tell me truthfully, Davidian," the Lord Ruler said, walking slowly toward the obligator. "Have you ever bedded a Skaa woman?"
The obligator paused.
"I followed the law. Each time I had them slain afterward."
"You lie," the Lord Ruler said, as if surprised. "You're uncertain."
Davidian was visibly shaking.
I think I got them all, my lord. There was one I may have been too lax with. I didn't know she was Skaa at first. The soldier I sent to kill her was too lenient, and he let her go. But I found her, eventually."
"Tell me," the Lord Ruler said, "did this woman bear any children?"
The room fell silent.
"Yes, my lord,"
the High Prelin said. The Lord Ruler closed his eyes, sighing. He turned back toward his throne.
"He is yours," he said to the Inquisitors.
Immediately, six Inquisitors dashed across the room, howling in joy, pulling obsidian knives from their sheaths beneath their robes. Davidian raised his arms, crying out as the Inquisitors fell on him, exulting in their brutality. Blood flew as they plunged their daggers over and over again into the dying man. The other obligators backed away, looking on in horror. Carr remained behind, smiling as he watched the massacre, as did the Inquisitor who was Vin's captor. One other Inquisitor remained back as well, though Vin didn't know why.
"Your point is proven, Carr," the Lord Ruler said, sitting wearily on his throne. "It seems that I have trusted too much in the obedience of mankind. I did not make a mistake. I have never made a mistake. However, it is time for a change. Gather the High Prelins and bring them here. Rouse them from their beds if need be. They will witness as I grant the Canton of Inquisition command and authority over the ministry."
Carr's smile deepened.
"The half-breed child will be destroyed."
"Of course, my lord," Carr said. "Though there are some questions I wish to ask her first. She was part of a team of Skaa mistings. If she can help us locate the others..."
"Very well," the Lord Ruler said. "That is your duty, after all."
Is there anything more beautiful than the sun? I often watch it rise, for my restless sleep usually awakens me before dawn. Each time I see its calm yellow light peeking above the horizon, I grow a little more determined, a little more hopeful. In a way, it is the thing that has kept me going all this time. 37.
"Kelsier, you cursed lunatic," Doxson thought, scribbling notes on the table map. "Why do you always just saunter away, leaving me to handle your messes?"
However, he knew his frustration wasn't real. It was simply a way of keeping himself from focusing on Kell's death. It worked. Kelsier's part in the plan, the vision, the charismatic leadership, was finished. Now it was Doxson's turn. He took Kelsier's original strategy and modified it. He was careful to keep the chaos at a manageable level, rationing the best equipment to the men who seemed the most stable. He sent contingents to capture points of interest, food and water deposits, before general rioting could steal them. In short, he did what he always did. He made Kelsier's dreams become reality. A disturbance came from the front of the room, and Doxson looked up as a messenger rushed in. The man immediately sought out Doxson at the center of the warehouse.
"What news?" Doxson asked as the man approached.
The messenger shook his head. He was a young man, in an imperial uniform, though he had removed the jacket to make himself less obtrusive.
"I'm sorry, sir," the man said quietly. "None of the guards have seen her come out, and, well, one claimed he saw her being carried toward the palace dungeons."
"Can you get her out?" Doxson asked.
The soldier, Goradel, paled. Only just a short time before, Goradel had been one of the Lord Ruler's own men. In truth, Doxson wasn't even certain how much he trusted the man. Yet the soldier, as a former palace guardsman, could get into places that Scar could not. His former allies didn't know he'd switched sides.
"Assuming he really has switched sides," Doxson thought. But, well, things were moving too quickly now for self-doubt.
Doxson had decided to use this man. He'd have to trust his initial instincts.
"Well,"
Doxson repeated. Goradel shook his head.
"There was an Inquisitor holding her captive, sir. I couldn't free her. I wouldn't have the authority.
Doxson sighed.
"Damn fool girl," he thought. "She should have had better sense than this. Kelsier must have rubbed off on her."
He waved the soldier away, then looked up as Hammond walked in, a large sword with a broken hilt resting on his shoulder.
"It's done," Ham said. "Keep Alarial just fell. Looks like Lee Cal is still holding, however."
Doxson nodded.
"We'll need your men at the palace soon. The sooner we break in there, the better chance we have of saving Vin."
However, his instincts told him that they'd be too late to help her. The main forces would take hours to gather and organize. He wanted to attack the palace with all of their armies in tandem. The truth was, he just couldn't afford to spare men on a rescue operation at the moment. Kelsier would probably have gone after her, but Doxson wouldn't let himself do something that brash. As he always said, someone on the crew needed to be realistic. The palace was not a place to attack without substantial preparation. Vin's failure proved that much. She'd just have to look after herself for the moment.
"I'll get my men ready," Ham said, nodding as he tossed his sword aside. "I'm going to need a new sword, though."
Doxson sighed.
"You thugs, always breaking things. Go see what you can find, then."
Ham moved off.
"If you see Sazed," Doxson called, "tell him that..."
Doxson paused, his attention drawn by a group of Ska rebels who marched into the room pulling a bound prisoner with a cloth sack on his head.
"What is this?" Doxson demanded.
One of the rebels elbowed his captive.
"I think he's someone important, my lord. Came to us unarmed. Asked to be brought to you. Promised us gold if we did it."
Doxson raised an eyebrow. The grunt pulled off the hood, revealing Elland Venture. Doxson blinked in surprise.
"You?"
Elland looked around. He was apprehensive, obviously, but held himself well, all things considered.
"Have we met?"
"Not exactly," Doxson said. "Blast. I don't have time for captives right now."
Still, the son of the Ventures. Doxson was going to need leverage with the powerful nobility when the fighting was over.
"I've come to offer you a truce," Elland Venture said.
"Excuse me?" Doxson asked.
"House Venture will not resist you," Elland said, "and I can probably talk the rest of the nobility into listening as well.
They're frightened. There's no need to slaughter them.
Doxson snorted. I can't exactly leave hostile armed forces in the city.
If you destroy the nobility, you won't be able to hold on for very long, Ellen said. We control the economy. The Empire will collapse without us.
That is kind of the point of this all, Doxson said.
Look, I don't have time. You must hear me out,
Ellen Venture said desperately.
If you start your rebellion with chaos and bloodshed, you'll lose it. I've studied these things. I know what I'm talking about. When the momentum of your initial conflict runs out, the people will start looking for other things to destroy. They'll turn on themselves. You must keep control of your armies.
Doxson paused. Ellen Venture was supposed to be a fool and a fop, but now he just seemed earnest.
I'll help you, Ellen said. Leave the nobleman's keeps alone and focus your efforts on the ministry and the Lord Ruler. They're your real enemies.
Look, Doxson said. I'll pull our armies away from Keep Venture. There's probably no need to fight them now that...
I sent my soldiers to Keep Lekal, Ellen said. Pull your men away from all the nobility. They're not going to attack your flanks. They'll just hole up in their mansions and worry.
He's probably right about that.
We'll consider...
Doxson trailed off, noticing that Ellen wasn't paying attention to him anymore. Blasted hard man to have a conversation with. Ellen was staring at Hammond, who had returned with a new sword. Ellen frowned, then his eyes opened wide.
I know you. You were the one who rescued Lord Renew's servants from the executions.
Ellen turned to Doxson, suddenly eager.
Do you know Velette, then? She'll tell you to listen to me.
Doxson shared a look with Ham.
What?
Ellen asked.
Vin, Doxson said. Velette. She went into the palace a few hours back. I'm sorry, lad. She's probably in the Lord Ruler's dungeons right now. Assuming she's even still alive.
Carr tossed Vin back into her cell. She hit the ground hard and rolled, her loose undershirt twisting around her, her head knocking against the cell's back wall. The Inquisitor smiled, slamming the door.
Thank you very much, he said through the bars. You just helped us achieve something that has been a long time in coming.
Vin glared up at him, the effects of the Lord Ruler's soothing weaker now.
It is unfortunate that Bendal isn't here, Carr said. He chased your brother for years, swearing that Tavidian had fathered a Scar half-breed. Poor Bendal. If only the Lord Ruler had left the survivor to us, so that we could have had revenge.
He looked over at her, shaking his spike-eyed head.
Ah, well, he was vindicated in the end. The rest of us believed your brother, but Bendal, even then he wasn't convinced, and he found you in the end.
My brother? Vin said, scrambling to her feet. He sold me out?
Sold you out, Carr said. He died promising us that you had starved to death years ago. He screamed it night and day beneath the hands of ministry torturers. It is very hard to hold out against the pains of an inquisitor's torture. Something you shall soon discover.
He smiled.
But first, let me show you something.
A group of guards dragged a naked, bound figure into the room. Bruised and bleeding, the man stumbled to the stone floor as they pushed him into the cell beside Vin's.
Says it!
Vin cried, rushing to the bars. The terraceman lay groggily as the soldiers tied his hands and feet to a small metal ring set into the stone floor. He had been beaten so severely that he barely seemed conscious, and he was completely naked. Vin turned away from his nudity, but not before she saw the place between his legs, a simple, empty scar where his manhood should have been.
All Terraceman stewards are eunuchs, he had told her.
That wound wasn't new, but the bruises, cuts, and scrapes were fresh.
"We found him sneaking into the palace after you," Carr said. "Apparently he feared for your safety."
"What have you done to him?" she asked quietly.
"Oh, very little, so far," Carr said. "Now you may wonder why I spoke to you of your brother. Perhaps you think me a fool for admitting that your brother's mind snapped before we drew out his secret. But you see, I am not so much a fool that I will not admit a mistake. We should have drawn out your brother's torture, made him suffer longer. That was an error indeed."
He smiled wickedly, nodding to Sazed.
"We won't make that mistake again, child. No, this time we're going to try a different tactic. We're going to let you watch us torture the Terraceman. We're going to be very careful, making certain his pain is lasting and quite vibrant. When you tell us what we want to know, we'll stop."
Vin shivered in horror.
"No, please."
"Oh, yes," Carr said. "Why don't you take some time to think about what we're going to do to him? The Lord Ruler has commanded my presence. I need to go and receive formal leadership of the ministry. We'll begin when I return."
He turned, black robe sweeping the ground. The guards followed, likely taking positions in the guard chamber just outside the room.
"Oh, Sazed,"
Vin said, sinking to her knees beside the bars of her cage.
"Now, mistress," Sazed said in a surprisingly lucid voice. "What did we tell you about running around in your undergarments? Why, if Master Doxen were here, he would scold you for certain."
Vin looked up, shocked. Sazed was smiling at her.
"Sazed,"
she said quietly, glancing in the direction the guards had gone.
"You're awake?" "Very awake," he said.
His calm, strong voice was a stark contrast to his bruised body.
"I'm sorry, Sazed," she said. "Why did you follow me? You should have stayed back and let me be stupid on my own."
He turned a bruised head toward her, one eye swollen, but the other looking into her eyes.
"Mistress," he said solemnly, "I vowed to Master Kelsier that I would see to your safety. The oath of a Terraceman is not something given lightly." "But you should have known you'd be captured," she said, looking down in shame. "Of course I knew, mistress," he said. "Why, how else was I going to get them to bring me to you?"
Vin looked up.
"Bring you to me?" "Yes, mistress. There is one thing that the ministry and my own people have in common, I think. They both underestimate the things that we can accomplish."
He closed his eyes, and then his body changed. It seemed to deflate, the muscles growing weak and scrawny, the flesh hanging loosely on his bones.
"Sazed!"
Vin cried out, pushing herself against the bars, trying to reach him.
"It is all right, mistress," he said in a faint, frighteningly weak voice. "I just need a moment to gather my strength." "Gather my strength?"
Vin paused, lowering her hand, watching Sazed for a few minutes.
"Could it be?"
He looked so weak, as if his strength, his very muscles, were being drawn away, and perhaps stored somewhere? Sazed's eyes snapped open,